think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 179 of Low Limit Football on this 9th of October, 2017. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and back for the final week of qualifying for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. As we stand right now, 17 teams have qualified for the World Cup, including newcomers Iceland today, with 6 more teams to join tomorrow. Egypt punched their ticket with a late penalty that sent grown men to tears all over Egypt. And with Gareth Bale missing from the World Cup qualifying after today's loss to Ireland, could we see more superstars miss out on this tournament next year? We're going to discuss that, and we'll start to bring you back into league focus with a huge list of games on the weekend and very special guest Lee Gunner from Gunner Bang TV on YouTube joining us in a little bit. Mr. Rojas, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing well, Joe. I mean, it's been a stressful last couple of days, I think, since we did our last show, yeah. And it's going to be a lot of stressful hours after this show. Yeah, I mean, it's been an impressive World Cup qualifying weekend. I think all across the entire world we saw some wonderful stories, saw some heartbreak. We saw most of everything that we love to see that happens in the international break. So it's good that we're going to have this opportunity to get it one more time tomorrow, and especially next month as we have our 32 teams for Russia's tournament.
You, my friend, have got yourself a little squeaky bum time coming up in the next 24 hours, ooh, I think. Ooh.
Big one.
Yeah. I mean, for you, a little more double, I think, you know, with the U.S. almost across the finish line. But, man, everybody, I think Venezuela might be still alive in CONMEBOL, don't you think? I mean, I know they're not.
To ruin the party, yeah, that's for sure.
But, man, everybody's still alive. And you see the SPI index come out for Paraguay. They are 60% favorites. Third choice right now in South America ahead of Mr. Leo Messi. I mean, it's insanity, isn't it?
It feels like we're in the twilight zone, don't you think?
Yeah, it's gonna be crazy. And I know, I'm sure, at least in North America, everyone's probably out of their gourds because, you know, all the matches will kick off at the same time tomorrow in South America. So you won't get the chance to see every single match as it's played. Unless you're really good with some computer work and be in sports. Be in Sports has it in the United States. They're only going to see the Argentina match on Be in Espanol because those 5 matches are going to run at the same time as the U.S. match against Trinidad and Tobago, as long as the U.S. men's national team brought their snorkels to Trinidad and Tobago this week. If anyone saw any of the pictures from the pitch from training earlier today, many people were saying it was better to go spearfishing than it was to actually try and play some soccer on that pitch. It was like a moat around the field, which is kind of crazy. But, you know, so tomorrow, BN Sports is definitely the network to have because you're going to have the U.S. men's national team on the Mothership Prime. In Espanol, you're going to have the Argentina match, and then you're going to have BN Sports Connect for all the other matches coming up tomorrow. So it's going to be – it's the day you want to kind of call out sick, right, Rob? I mean – you start at 5 a.m. With the Australia Syria second leg. You get into Europe around 2:30, and then just as you get a little bit of dinner in you, you go and hit the other games, right? It's crazy. So, but it should definitely be a lot of fun. And then when we get back, we should have, what is it? What did we say, Rob? 23 of the 32 teams when we come back next week.
That sounds about right. Yeah, 23.
23 of the 32. We'll add four more from Europe. We'll add one from the South America playoff with was it AFC, right? We'll add one more from the North American playoff, and we have to add three more African teams to this tournament before all is said and done. So let's jump into all our other stuff, Rob, that we normally do here. Starting off with with the trivia question before we go to opening thoughts.
All right.
And I've got two trivia questions for you tonight. One is the proper trivia question that I'm going to give you the answer to at the end of the show. And the other one, the other one's kind of an extra treat that I'm going to give you leading into our opening thoughts topic, okay? So, so I got two for you. So for the proper official Sir Bob's trivia question of the evening, we saw Iceland qualify for the World Cup earlier today. Iceland is a nation of 334,000 people. It's the smallest nation to ever qualify for the World Cup. So I ask you this. What country's record did they break? So what country was previously the smallest country in the world to qualify by population? What year did that country qualify? And what was their population at the time?
I'll give you the first two, but I don't know about the last one.
All right. Don't give it to me. You got to give it to me at the end of the show.
Yeah, all right. Of course.
So that's it. So I'm going to repeat it. Iceland, 334,000 people. Today became the smallest nation to qualify for the World Cup by population. What country's record did they break? What year did that country qualify? And what was their population at the time? So there you go.
Sounds good.
So my second trivia question for you tonight, and I have to find this one. I labeled this one up here. And it goes along with our opening thoughts topic tonight. Tonight we're going to talk, and I'm going to introduce our opening thoughts topic. And it is the topic of Andrea Pirlo. Andrea Pirlo retired from world football, or is going to retire from world football at the end of NYCFC's season, coming up in just a few weeks, depending on how far they run into the tournament. Certainly a storied career, to say the least, Rob. This is a gentleman that has won pretty much everything. And I've got a video here that hopefully is not going to play on me. But you never know, because... Oh, there you go. So so Andrea Pirlo is, announced his retirement earlier this week. My trivia question to you, Rob, is Andrea Pirlo spent pretty much his entire career in Italy, correct? Except for this trip to NYCFC and MLS for the past couple seasons. So in Italy, during his career, he played for five different teams, okay? Can you name them?
Yep.
All right. So we'll answer that one at the end of opening thoughts. How's that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So again, like I said, our opening thoughts tonight is in regards to Andrea Pirlo announcing his retirement from football in December. This is a gentleman that's won the World Cup. He's won the Champions League. He's won the Coppa Italia. He's won the Super Cup. And I thought I'd muted that. I apologize. But certainly, you know, one of the greatest midfielders, I would have to say. You know, he's certainly up there along the lines with many of the other ones. A free kick specialist, trequartista. He kind of is the definition of it. So, your thoughts on Andrea Pirlo, Rob? Let's start there.
Yeah, I mean, what else can you say of what you just mentioned? I mean, he's won everything you could think of as one of those trequartistas, as one of those midfielders of part of, I guess, Italy's golden generation. You know, going back to his career starting at Milan, where he played there for most of his career. Mm-hmm. He's won Champions League. I think he's won two Champions League, if I'm not mistaken. He's won multiple Serie A's, among other things. And then during that time, he, of course, on the Italian national team, he won the World Cup in 2006. Obviously, one of the more influential players, I would say, of that tournament. And then headed to Juventus about 2011, if I'm not mistaken, and won everything there as well. Yes. So he's definitely had an astonished career. I think he is one of the finest midfielders of, I guess, this generation of players, you know. I think many people need to realize of how much of an impact and, I guess, influence he's had as maybe one of the greatest ever exponents in this position. You know, he had vision, ball control, creativity, passing ability. You know, he could score free kicks. He could score penalties, as we saw with his Panenka back in Euro 2012. You know, so he's done everything. And he knows how to play. And he's one of those classy midfielders that Italy giftedly had during the last decade. And obviously his time at NYCFC was lackluster, to say the least. But nevertheless, I mean, this is a player who time and time again has proved to just keep us in awe, I would say. And you, of course, Joe, I can say a bunch about this player given his roots to you.
Yeah, you know, for me, he's the type of player everybody wants on their team. You know, the ability to transition the attack, the true definition of Trey Cartista. You know, I was doing a little bit of reading up on him, you know, throughout his career, just looking at some of the things back on his career. One of the things that I found interesting, a little fact that I read about, it was kind of like one of those 10 things you didn't know about Andrea Pirlo. But apparently in 2006, after he won the World Cup, he had considered moving to Real Madrid. Now, if you could imagine, you know, a guy like Andrea Pirlo, you got to remember Fabio Cannavaro moved over to Madrid at this time, and you could imagine a guy like Pirlo coming over. What you know, talking about Galacticos, I mean, he would certainly be one of those superstars that you'd recognize forever. But Adriano Galliani, who was the vice president of AC Milan, and this is something I never heard of anybody doing with any other player in the world. We haven't even heard this with Messi, and though this might not be a bad idea. Galliani did not want him to leave AC Milan at the time. So basically, Galliani gave, he said to him, and I'm reading this off of the Forza Italian football website. It was a quote attributed to Galliani that he said to Pirlo, Andrea, my friend, you're not going anywhere. You're not leaving because you're going to sign this. It's for 5 years, and we've left the salary details blank so you can put in what you want. He basically handed him a blank contract and said, you write the numbers in and sign it, and we're good. I don't think I've ever heard of that ever. But apparently this actually happened where Galliani gave him a blank check and said, you add the zeros and then run it to the bank and cash it, and we're good. You know, and this is a credit to the type of player in 2006. I mean, Rob, this is 11 years ago, and this is the kind of player that we're talking about. You know, this is, you know, what we're dealing with, and this is a player that, you know, in 2006 at this point, it really, you know, other than playing for Inter, but being out on loan, was really just at Milan. You know, just about 4 or 5 years. He wasn't, you know, it wasn't somebody that was entirely established. If I remember correctly, he wasn't even like a major player on the Italian national team for the World Cup because he was still young. You know, got to remember he's 38. That was 11 years ago. He was 27. I mean, I don't remember him playing too much in the 2006 World Cup. But again, this is a guy that, you know, is legendary at this point.
He played every minute.
He did play every minute.
He played all games.
Okay,
actually.
So I'm not remembering the things that I do remember because I did a lot of traveling during that 06 World Cup. Besides the Zidane header, the Fabio Grosso goal against Australia, you know, and the Pirlo goal, you know, even though the Pirlo goal was an extra kind of an added bonus, you know, Pirlo is a guy. I'm sorry, not Andrea Pirlo, Alex Del Piero. My goodness.
Against who?
Alex Del Piero was Germany. If you remember, he cuts down and he hits that ball with his right foot and bends it around the keeper and into the opposite corner of the net. That was the goal to make it, I want to say, 3-1 in extra time there.
2-0. Grosso scored in the last.
Okay, it was the second goal of the lead.
It was in the semifinal. Grosso scored that goal. The game against Australia was the penalty by Totti.
Oh, yes. It was on the call where they said, if I remember right, it was Grosso dove.
Grosso dive, yeah, yes. Exactly.
So that's so I'm getting my games messed up. You know, some of those I watched in Los Angeles, and some of them I watched here at home. So, so going back to Pirlo, you know, a free kick specialist. I don't know. We've seen a lot of these posts come up lately as who would you want to take this free kick? And you get the usual suspects, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, Roberto Carlos. Pirlo is always one of those usual suspects. Mm-hmm. And certainly just a fantastic player. I believe he's actually been up for the Ballon d'Or, I want to say 3 times, but has never finished in the top three for the Ballon d'Or. But certainly considered one of the greatest footballers we've ever seen. Just obviously, and he's, I think for me, Rob, he's probably another victim of the Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi era. Do you know what I mean? Where you have those.
No, sorry, Joe. Yeah. I don't agree because he's won everything else.
Oh, he's won everything else, but not the Ballon d'Or. So he's won the team awards.
Okay.
Yeah, no. He's won the team awards. Don't get me wrong. He's won the team trophies. I'm talking about as an individual award.
Ah, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's one of the things. So, but obviously, you know, with an end to a great career coming up. Let's see some of the other things that I'm just trying to find some stuff, and I'm trying to recognize these trophies that he's won. But obviously, you know, the big one, the World Cup in 2006. Was certain a big deal. So, you know, any final words you want to go before I give you the trivia answer and add our guest in? So
no, I mean, I guess we can both ask this question to ourselves. You know, what's next? What's next for Andrea Pirlo? You know, does he get into coaching? Does he take a break? Does he go in the media, or does he stay at his vineyard in Brescia?
Right. I was gonna say. You know, I don't have the answer. I don't know if he would make a good coach or not. He's one of the guys that gives me a feel of the talent is in his body. Okay, is in his mind, and sometimes those players aren't good at translating that talent out into the world. Do you know what I mean? To coach somebody. So I don't know that he would be a good coach. I think he'd be a great tactician if he would attempt coaching. I think he would be a great tactician, but I don't know that coaching would be his style. I think he's going to go back to making wine. I think he's just going to hang out and have wine. So, and I just closed out my answer for the trivia questions. So let me get that up here real quick again, Rob. So, I had asked you, let me just take a look here quickly. If I can just find it, let me see. So Andrea Pirlo has played for 5 teams, right, in his career in Italy. The 6th team overall is NYCFC, but he's played for 5 teams overall in Italy. Can you name them?
Milan,
right.
Juventus,
right.
Inter. He's played for Inter.
Yep, both.
Brescia.
Sides. Brescia. Yep, and then one
and
more.
And I want to say
28 matches, 6 goals for this team. He was there on loan. In the 1999 to 2000 season.
Parma? No.
Nope, not Parma. Close.
Peru? I have no idea. I don't know the last one.
Regina.
Regina.
1999 to 2000 loan. He played at Regina. So So Inter. Brescia.
One of the sorry, Joe. Just one last thing. You know, one of those few players who played for both Milans, huh?
That's right. That's right. He did play. He was on both sides of the locker room there in Milan and. You know, but obviously the close to a fantastic. And I thought I muted that sound. Close to a fantastic season or fantastic career, and certainly gonna miss him. But you've got a few more opportunities to go out and see him before he hangs him up in NYCFC. So joining us now on Low Limit Football from Gunner Bang Television on YouTube, Lee Gunner. Lee, how are you tonight?
I'm still awake. That's the main thing.
I know you're just a couple hours behind us, but thank you for really taking out the extra time tonight. We appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. Welcome.
So I want to jump in real quick with something that you actually talked about a little bit on your channel with your most recent post, and that is the injuries to Mustafi and Koscielny. Mustafi, I don't know if we have any answer on it other than the fact that they're saying he's going to be out for 7 to 8 weeks. Koscielny, like you had mentioned, was an Achilles injury that has been kind of a nagging injury for him. So, first off, where do we stand on both players? And then I want to get into what Arsenal should have done, because you were opinionated as to, you know, why we're in this position at Arsenal, why we don't have that central defense locked up, and where should we go? So let's start off first with their injury status.
There's reports that have come out this evening regarding Mustafi that it's It's an injury that could potentially keep him out for 7 weeks, which is a massive blow to Arsenal, especially when you partner that up with Koscielny having, as you just said, an Achilles injury that's been nagging for nearly two seasons now. So it's a major, major worry. I'm not Mustafi's biggest fan. I think that as a player, he's done all right since he's been at Arsenal, but he hasn't hit the heights that I'd expect a £35 million centre-back to hit. But with that being said, he is better than what we have in reserve. So if he's out injured for any length of time, especially with the running of games that we've got coming up in November, we've got Man City, we've got Tottenham coming up. So, yeah, it is a massive, massive worry for me. And then the fact that Koscielny is now 32 years old, again, with the Achilles injury, we can't rely on this guy to play 2 to 3 games a week. So when you look at that and then you scratch the surface and you look down at the players that could potentially come in to replace those guys, it's for a club of Arsenal's size, it's extremely embarrassing, in my opinion. I think that Per Mertesacker, as good as he has been over the years, he's not the player he was 5 to 7 years ago. He can do it once a week at best, but to rely on this guy full term for 7, 8, 9 games, whatever it may be, no, not for me. I don't think he's got the legs for that anymore, if he had the legs at all, to be honest. Although I am sort of going in a little bit on him, I do think he is defensively, in terms of defensive brain, I think he is our best centre-back, but this is the Premier League. And you need to have legs as well as brain, and sadly he doesn't have that. But then when you look at Callum Chambers, this guy, I don't know where he is. I don't know if he still plays for Arsenal. He's played an Emirates Cup game in pre-season, and he looked like he was our best player defensively over that pre-season, and he's been seen for one half of football since. He went off with an alleged injury in that game, and he hasn't been seen again. So that leaves Rob Holding, who I rate extremely highly, but at the same time, he's a youngster. You can't pin your hopes on a 21-year-old to come in and try and stop the likes of Man City strikers and Harry Kane, who's currently one of the best strikers in world football. So, yeah, it's worrying times. And just leading on to what you said about what we should have done in the summer, we definitely should have strengthened in that area. I was one of the fans calling out for that. I could see this coming from the summer, that Koscielny, with his Achilles injury, was not going to be fit for a whole season. And, you know, nobody could predict that Mustafi was going to go down with this injury, but you need to have adequate strength in depth, and that means top quality strength in depth. So, yeah, it's a bit worrying, to be honest with you. But, you know, in typical Arsenal fashion, we'll probably go to Man City and probably win with a Mertesacker winner.
Yeah, right. Now, let me ask you this. You know, many teams, especially when they're in the Champions League, tend to try and add some depth to their sides, especially because you have so many competitions and so many matches week after week after week. Could it be a situation where they felt they didn't want to add anybody because they weren't in Champions League?
Yeah, I think you make a great point, to be honest with you. The fact that we're in the Europa League gives Arsene Wenger a chance to totally mix up this starting 11. I mean, it's a completely different team to what plays on a weekly basis in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. You see the likes of Theo Walcott getting a game, whereas he's sort of don't really fit the system anymore for Premier League games. We go with the three at the back at the moment, which doesn't require a right winger. And he sort of shot himself in the foot, Theo in particular, by saying he wanted to play as a striker. And then he got his chance as a striker and said, well, actually, I actually think I'm a right winger. And now, ironically, we don't actually play with a right winger. So, yeah, I think you make a good point. I think that they looked at it and they thought, well, it's not the Bayern Munichs, it's not Barcelona or Madrid's, you know, and they just thought that they could possibly get by with a reserve team in the Europa League. And maybe if we do get to the final stages of that competition, then maybe we can mix it up and put some of the bigger players into the starting 11. But, you know, if that is how we're looking at it as a club, especially one of our size, then it doesn't sit well with me, to be honest with you. I mean, I know a lot of players don't want to come and sit on the bench if they're first team regulars elsewhere, but at the same time, it's a squad game, and we see that more than any era now. You know, back when Arsene Wenger and Arsenal were winning stuff, you know, we didn't really have a massive squad. It was the same sort of 14, 15 players. Nowadays, the Premier League's evolved, football's evolved, and you need a 25-man squad to get through a Premier League season alone, let alone any other competition. So yeah, I think that they probably did look at it and they probably did think, well, it's a lesser competition, we can get by through that. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter if we go to the final. You know, we're not really going to take it seriously. Whereas if it was Champions League, they probably would have gone out and strengthened in that area, definitely.
So my last question, you know, just to follow up on this before I send you over to Rob, is, you know, now let's say that they do advance. I mean, the team as structured, I would say, because of the weakness in the Europa League at this stage, the team is certainly capable of getting to quarterfinals, you know, or even deeper semifinals. And then you're going to start to really run into some serious competition. So that would put us past the January window. So my question would be, what can Arsenal do in this January window to strengthen those positions that they need, like center back, you know, like defense?
Well, I think that there's a number of players out there that I'd love at Arsenal Football Club, but it's whether the club match my ambition.
Yeah, right.
You know, a good centre-back is hard to find. I mean, like I said, we've spent a lot of money on Mustafi, and he's by no stretch, nowhere near like being the finished article. So, you know, you've got to go in and put your hand in your pocket and go, right, we're going to buy a finished article, world-class striker. But then you have to look on the other hand and go, well, which world-class defender would then want to come to Arsenal when they're not in the Champions League? So it's a catch-22, really. You know, look, in my opinion, everybody's available at the right price. That's how I always see it. But do they want to come? But in terms of positions that we need strengthening, I've been crying out for a centre-back for over a year now. I didn't think Mustafi was enough when we signed him. Now letting Gabriel go as well, it could come back to haunt us. But I also have been crying out for a defensive midfielder, like a proper, just sit there, somebody like in the Kante mold, that will just sit there and just destroy. And he knows he's not a technically gifted footballer, but he will just nick the ball and give it to someone better. And Arsenal have needed that for years now. So if you're looking for names, I don't know. It's hard to pick names. There's so many good players in them positions. It's just whether they want to come,
yeah,
and whether we'll pay the money.
Hi, Lee. I just want to jump in here real quick and talk about one of the players who have shined for Arsenal this season, and that's Alexander Lacazette. Obviously, the Frenchman came to Arsenal after scoring 37 goals last season for Lyon in all competitions, and has started off very well. You know, he's already played 6 games in the Premier League and scored 4 goals so far. So I just want your reaction, I guess, to the fine start that Lacazette is having. You know, you think that he will continue this form? Do you feel that there's something else that maybe has to be improved by him? Or do you think that he's fine the way he is now?
Well, I've been crying out for Lacazette to come to Arsenal for about three and a half years now. I think he's a fantastic striker. I think he is world-class. There's a debate over in England between rival fans as to whether he's any good. Personally, I think that he is exactly what we needed as a club. I look at him and I see him somewhere sort of in the Ian Wright mould. He can score all types of goals. He can score the penalties, the 20-yard screamer, the tap-in, the headers, left foot, right foot. And that sort of... that I look at it and I just think that when I was growing up, I see Ian Wright. And this guy is the closest I've seen to Ian Wright in recent times. He started off fantastically well. He scored in his first game at the Emirates against Leicester. It was actually his debut, so yep. He scored after 90 seconds. And Yeah, that was a short-lived celebration because they went and equalised 3 minutes, 4 minutes later. But I think he started really well. I'm a little bit upset that we haven't got to see him, Sanchez and Ozil as a three up front yet. That hasn't happened this season. I'm also slightly worried that Arsene Wenger does substitute him and has done quite a lot since he's been here. Is rarely played, if any, I think, 90 minutes. But I suppose it's a long season. He will play 90 minutes at some point. And, yeah, I'm over the moon that we've got him, to be honest with you. And the fact that Alexis Sanchez is still here, and Ozil as well, for now. It's exciting as a front three. And it can only benefit Lacazette by having them two in the team.
Definitely. He's already proved in various performances how much of a world-class striker he is and one of the best strikers, not just in the world, but in the Premier League as well. So, yeah, here's hoping that he does continue this fine form for the Gunners.
I think the thing that a lot of people don't see with Lacazette is his movement off the ball. It's all well and good putting the ball in the back of the net, which he can do and has done, but it's his movement and his work rate. I've had the privilege to be able to go to nearly every game this season. I've only missed Leicester so far. And when you watch the guy off the ball, when we're out of possession, the amount of runs he makes and the tracking back he does when he loses the ball, he's always the first one. As soon as he loses the ball, he runs back. He's running past midfielders to get the ball back. And I like that in a striker. It shows that he's happy to be here. It shows that he wants to prove to the fans that he's good enough to be here. And that can only bode well for us going forward.
Do you personally think that he might, if his form continues and is phenomenal for Arsenal for seasons to come, that he can emulate, the impact, not just Ian Wright, but maybe another compatriot of Arsenal, a legend in Arsenal, in Thierry Henry?
I hope so. If he gets anywhere near, then he's going to score a hell of a lot of goals, that's for sure. And he's going to light up the Emirates Stadium on a weekly basis.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to my next question. Obviously, you just mentioned Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez. Two players who, well, obviously, the Chilean was much more in the news regarding his possible departure from the Emirates, but they both stayed. And the big question, I guess, for a lot of Arsenal fans is regarding, will they continue? They're both under contract until the end of next year. So I just want your thoughts on, what do you think is the future for both these players? Do you see them leaving the club, supposing that Arsenal do not finish in a good position in the Premier League or not doing well in the Europa League? Do you see both these men leave at the end of the season?
I could potentially see one, if not both of them, leaving in January, to be honest. I think that it's sad that they're both in this position. Looking at it as a lifelong Arsenal fan, watching Alexis Sanchez week in, week out is an absolute pleasure. He's a joy to watch, and he's worth the money on his own. Mesut Ozil, I'm not his biggest fan, I must admit. I think he's so overrated, it's unbelievable. I think that he gets a pass with Arsenal fans because he was our record signing for so long. But this all boils down to a lack of maybe leadership by the club. The club should have been negotiating with these two players a lot earlier than they actually did. There's reports floating around in England that Mesut Ozil's not had any contract talks with the club since February. Now, read into that what you will. That, to me, looks like he's out. the difference between the two of them, I see, is that Alexis Sanchez gets a lot of hate off of Arsenal fans. A lot of Arsenal fans say that he loses the ball all the time and he's a petulant child when we're losing. He's throwing his gloves off and storms off the pitch. Whereas Mesut Ozil's like the media darling. His PR game is on point. And again, in the summer, he's coming out with all the right stuff in the summer, like saying, I love the club. I want to stay at Arsenal. I want to sign for Arsenal. Yet the whole time he's not had any contract discussions since February. So, he's going to walk out the back door and an absolute hero to Arsenal fans on a free if he doesn't get sold in January. And then Alexis Sanchez, because we as a club accepted a bid of 60 million from Manchester City, and he said that he wants to win Champions League, which we're obviously not in, he's gonna go an absolute, you know, the fans are gonna go nuts when he walks off up to Man City. So yeah, they're both doing exactly the same thing, but in completely different ways, and it's quite sad really, because, you know, I was over the moon when we signed Mesut Ozil. At Real Madrid, the guy was absolutely brilliant, and I must admit, 4.5 years later, I'm sat here thinking, wow, how did we waste 42 million quid on him? Because I just don't, I just don't get the hype around him. I really don't. I don't see it. Whereas Alexis Sanchez, I'll clap him out the ground on his last game. He's been a pleasure to watch, and I believe he deserves better.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think a lot of Arsenal fans, and I know a bunch of Arsenal fans who, you know, have always been on the fence regarding, you know, Alexis' loyalty. Some are really against him because of the situation of him trying to leave the club and saying those comments. And then there's the other side of the coin. So, yeah, I definitely get what you're saying.
I think the thing is, like I said, Mesut Ozil's got a great PR team. If you look at his social media presence, he's got about 7 or 8 million followers on Twitter, more than Arsenal Football Club. The same on Instagram. He's got millions on Instagram. So when he puts stuff out there to the public, you know, a lot of people that support Arsenal because Mesut Ozil plays for Arsenal. When he eventually leaves, which he will, and goes to the next club, they won't support Arsenal anymore. They'll go to the club Mesut Ozil's going to. And there's thousands, if not millions, that are like that. And, you know, fair play to him. That's cool. You know, they've obviously contributed to Arsenal's income in the last few years. So I haven't got an issue with that. But what I do take issue with is the way that he, and I can see it a mile off, the way he's sort of manipulating everybody into thinking that he's the good guy and he is trying and he really wants to stay, when secretly underneath all of that, he's itching to get out of the club. Whereas Alexis Sanchez don't care about his PR. I think he's on par with Tottenham Hotspur for Twitter followers. He don't really care about all of that. He just wants to win trophies. And when he comes out with a statement of, I want to win the Champions League, Arsenal fans have sort of taken that to heart, as if to say, well, you're disrespecting us because we're not in it, and your contract ends at the end of the season and we might not be in it again, you know. And they're very, very similar scenarios, but completely different ways of handling it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, so it's going to be an interesting next set of months regarding the future of both these men. And just my last question, and thank you again, Lee, for coming on.
No, you're welcome.
No, thank you. So we look at the season as a whole. I mean, you know, I think a lot of expectation maybe isn't too much on Arsenal this season, not being in the Champions League. They're obviously in the Europa League and obviously going to contend as favorites for that, as well as various other tournaments. But I just want your prediction to think, what do you think Arsenal will finish, not just maybe in the Premier League, but maybe in the Europa League as well?
That's a great question. To be honest, at the start of the season, I was quite impressed with the two signings we made in the summer, with Lacazette and Kolasinac. And Kolasinac's turned out to be an absolute steal. Free signing. What a player that guy is. And then if you add that to Lacazette, and then obviously Sanchez is still here, Ozil's still here. In the end, it looked like it had turned out to be a half-decent summer. Although that being said, I still think we were short centre-back and defensive midfield. So I predicted that we'd finish about fifth or sixth, because obviously all the teams around us have improved. The only thing that stops me thinking that now is the fact that the games have started, the season's in full flow, and Tottenham Hotspur can't win a game at home. And then if you add that into the fact that Liverpool's form recently has been extremely bad, and they're getting goals going in left, right and centre. So it does give me a little bit of hope that we can get top four. But that all depends on whether Sanchez and Ozil are still here in January, and whether we go and do what's required in January, if the likes of Mustafi are going to have this injury for long term that may go on. Because when Arsenal say 7 weeks, it ends up being 17 weeks. And the same with Koscielny. Obviously, it's a long term niggly one that's on and off throughout the course of a season. So League wise, I'd say anywhere between fourth and sixth. It's hard to put an exact on it, but a little bit inside of me wants us to get Champions League again, because going all the way to Belarus for football matches is not the one. although Minsk was beautiful, that their capital was absolutely stunning. So, yeah, different places, I suppose. But coming on to Europa League, yeah, we're one of the favourites. But AC Milan have got a good team. The Champions League teams drop down in the coming months. And wouldn't it be ironic if we end up getting Bayern Munich, who drop down if they finish third, and then they go and knock us out? So depends how Arsene takes it, really. If he takes that competition seriously, I can see us going all the way to the final and potentially winning it. I think we're good enough to beat any team in the world on our day. And it's a cup competition. We do well in cup competitions. So, yeah, I hope we get top four. For now, I can't really see it, but I think a cup is probably our best option. The League Cup, we never take seriously, so I think that's out of the equation. FA Cup, obviously we're the holders, so we will definitely take that seriously, and hopefully we can get to the final again. But I think our best route into Champions League is by winning Europa League.
Definitely, I would agree with you 100%. I do want to jump in here, Lee, and just ask you one last quick question. I know it's getting pretty late for you, and I appreciate you taking the time. I want to ask you about Arsene Wenger, who we've kind of avoided here a little bit. I would imagine, you know, I don't mean to keep you up all night, so I'm not going to.
No, you're welcome. I'm awake. I've had about seven coffees, so I'm fine.
Oh, there you go. The you know, obviously. You know, as far as I know, pretty much everyone on this planet is a Wenger out guy. I haven't met the person that says Wenger stays. So my question to you is, you know, where do they go from here? When do you, in your opinion, think Arsene Wenger will finally step down from the head coaching position at Arsenal? And who do you think will come in? I know I watched your blog earlier today. Mark Overmars is coming over from Ajax. Into the front office, you know, is there a change of the guard here possibly beginning to happen at Arsenal?
It appears so. Although the Mark Overmars story that's come out, it doesn't say what role he's going to take at the club. Mm-hmm. Obviously Steve Bould's an ex-player for Arsenal, a very good centre-back, and our defence is ropey at best. So, you know, Steve Bould doesn't really get any input into how we defend as a team going forward or backwards. So, you know, it's great that Mark Overmars is coming back. Absolutely loved the guy when I was growing up. See him score at Old Trafford, scoring in a cup final. So, yeah, it's good that he's coming back. But in terms of whether it's a changing of the guard, I'm not sure. I mean, Arsene Wenger surrounds himself with yes men. So, you know, I suppose only time will tell. My ideal on it would be that he comes in as director of football. Mm-hmm. Somebody like Ancelotti, who is available, could potentially be the next manager with Mark Overmars as director of football. That would be what I would want as it stands today. But I don't know. I mean, they shaped it in the summertime. They shook up some of the backroom staff. Now with him coming in as possible sporting director, it looks like they're going in a different direction. But at the same time, you've still got the likes of Ivan Gazidis there. You've still got Stan Kroenke running everything. You've still got Arsene Wenger currently as manager and under contract until the end of the following season. Personally, I can't see Arsene Wenger retiring anytime soon. I think he'll see out his contract. And I personally think he'll sign another one. Because whilst the money's still getting thrown at him, he's going to keep taking it.
You know, I couldn't believe he signed the last one. I couldn't believe they offered him the last one. I mean, everyone on the planet wanted him out. And all of a sudden, the top brass, the front office says, no, let's give you another two-year contract. And you think not only will he see out this two-year contract, you think he'll actually be there longer. I can't imagine Arsenal fans are happy to hear that.
There's still a lot of Arsenal fans in England that rate him. There's still a lot of Arsenal fans that won't put his name in the mud. They'll back him until the day he leaves. Whereas I gave up on the guy maybe seven seasons ago now. You know, and I personally think that he's trying to stay and outdo Alex Ferguson's 26 years at Man United. I think that's what he wants, so he can say, yeah, I beat Fergie. Even though he didn't beat him in Trophy Hall, he beat him in years at the club. But yeah, you'll be surprised how many still back him. And I don't know why, to be honest with you. But I mean, Arsenal as a football club, they bottled that decision in the summer. Stan Kroenke, Alderweireld, Gazidis, everybody, not one of them has recruited a football manager in their time at the club. So they just took the easy option. And, you know, it's no coincidence that the likes of Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil are running down their contract when they see that their boss did exactly the same last season. And, you know, how can Arsene Wenger have a go at him when he done exactly the same the season before? I mean, from top to bottom, it's a bit of a shambles, to be honest. I mean, even Gazidis got nearly £1 million bonus for finishing fifth last season. You know, Arsene Wenger got rewarded a £2 million bumper contract, a £2 million extra to what he was already on. He's now over £10 million a year. You know, and it's the only club in world football that rewards people for failure. But
it shocks me. I still can't wrap my head around it. Trust me. So, Lee, I want to thank you for taking the time out and joining us tonight. I know it's late there for you, but we appreciate you going the extra mile for us, and look forward to having you again very, very soon. Actually, before I even let you go, I'm remiss. Let everyone know how you can how they can find your YouTube channel, because I mean, you've done great things in just 6 months.
Thank you. I started it just on a whim, really. I just thought, you know what, there's a few channels popping up, and I love talking football, especially Arsenal. So I just thought, you know what, I'm going to start a channel, and I can't believe how quickly it's gone to over 6,000 subscribers. So yeah, if anybody listening wants to go and check it out, then just type in YouTube and then type in Gunner Bang. Gunner as in Arsenal Gunners. Bang, all one word, Gunner Bang. So yeah, if you want to go and check that out, feel free, subscribe, share the videos about, and I'd appreciate that.
Absolutely. No, and again, it was our pleasure to have you on tonight. Thanks for coming on, and we look forward to definitely having you back in the future, mate.
I appreciate you guys letting me on. Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure. All right, have a good Thank night. You. Cheers.
And that was Lee Gunner from Gunner Bang Television on YouTube. Great to catch up with him and chat about Arsenal, and we didn't even really get a chance to jump into the World Cup qualifiers and really talk England that much. But let's, Rob, let's get into that. Let's talk about the matches that we'd predicted on the past week, and then we'll just go ahead and start looking ahead to the future. So, we'd be remiss not to jump in. I know you let us off with the Australia one last week. We talked about that qualifier, but let's jump into the CONMEBOL stuff right away, man. Go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. But before that, I can just mention the Australia-Syria game. It was a 1-1 draw. It ended in a 1-1 draw for both these teams in Malaysia. And tomorrow morning at, I believe, 6 in the morning, something along those lines, they will define the winner of the AFC playoff. And the winner of that will play the fourth-place team in the hexagonal in CONCACAF.
Right, so... in that matchup, I guess we'll throw that one out there quick as for a match of the week. Set your alarm clocks 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. so really, just what is that? Just 10 hours, a little over 9 hours from now. Yeah. so get to bed. But let's talk about the matches that we had in CONMEBOL last week.
Sure, absolutely. The first match we had was Argentina Peru. We predicted I predicted a 2-1 victory. Joe, you had it at a 3-1 victory, both for Argentina. Then a 0-0 draw, and obviously I think you saw the game much more than I did, and I was watching it on the computer because of the Colombia-Paraguay game on my TV. But I'm just looking at this, and I'm thinking to myself, Argentina got really, really unlucky. You know, they were more dominant than Peru in that game. Gallese, the Peruvian goalkeeper, had a great match. The defense of Peru was very compact and strong. And, you know, it just feels like, you know, what's next? Yeah. What's next for Argentina?
You know, I've got to go back and look, but if I remember correctly, and I was doing a little bit of homework on Argentina here in the meantime, you know, 0-0 draw to Peru. They scored one goal against Venezuela, 0-0 against Uruguay. They lost 2-0 to Argentina. They've scored one goal You know, that really, if you go back to the Chile victory, they scored two goals in their last five matches. This is not the top attacking team in the world. This is not what the top attacking team in the world should do. No. You know, it translated over to this nil-nil draw with Peru. And like you said, Gallese did have a great match. And they just, you know, Argentina just in the end could not finish. You know, just looking at the match statistically. And actually, my stats are wrong, Rob, because this said Argentina had 94 goal attempts. I find that one hard to believe. But it said that they had 8 shots on goal, which I do find easier to believe. You know, just an amazing performance, but lacking that final finish. You know, and then you also look back. Now, granted, they were totally hurt when they brought in Fernando Gago in the 16th yep. minute, and then 6 minutes later take him out with a torn ACL. And that really, you know, hampered Sampaoli and what he could do. But from that result, you never saw Dybala get on this match. You never saw Icardi get on there. I know people, I was watching Twitter as I was trying to watch, you know, the Paraguay match and watch this match at the same time, and people were losing their minds. It's like, how does Sampaoli get to this point? And he doesn't have at least one of them in, if not both, which is crazy. And just to follow up on that, Rob, SportsCenter in Espanol just posted on Twitter about an hour ago the potential starting 11 for Argentina. Again, no Dybala, no Icardi, nope. Benedetto as nope. the striker, and Rigoni on the right-hand side. I mean, is this the team that you'd want out there if you're an Argentinian fan?
No, I wouldn't. But what more can you want? No. What more can you want? I mean, you know, if Dybala hasn't, you know, Icardi didn't show up in those games, Dybala hasn't showed up for those games, so, yeah. You know, you're already losing lives on strikers. But, yeah, I mean, whatever happened, obviously we'll get to our match in a few minutes, but, you know, it's a really tough situation for Argentina to be in, and, you know, possibly going out of the World Cup, which we thought was unheard of when this whole thing started.
True, very true. Let's look at the second matchup in CONMEBOL that we had slated last week as a match of the week. Go for it.
Sure, absolutely. We had Colombia against Paraguay and a must-win for both these nations in Barranquilla. Joe, you had a 2-1 victory for the Colombians. I had a 1-0 victory for Paraguay. Joe got the score right, but I got the team right. Yes. So it ended 2-1 to Paraguay. And probably one of the most dramatic finishes you would see in a game in CONMEBOL, you know. Falcao took the lead in the 79th minute off a wonder breakaway from Colombia, and he was able to chip the goalkeeper, Anthony Silva, to give Colombia the lead. And they only needed to hold on for another 11 minutes for them to qualify directly for the World Cup. But then in the 89th minute, Oscar Cardoso ended up scoring off a David Ospina blunder for him to score the equalizer. And then just 3 minutes later, Antonio Sanabria, you know, in-form Antonio Sanabria from Real Betis, scores, and he has his fifth goal. He has his fifth goal in 4 games for club and country. So and now Paraguay are in a big situation, an opportunity for them to qualify for the World Cup against Venezuela on Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. They you know, and part of what we were talking about earlier with the Argentina matchup got to the point where I didn't want to watch it anymore. So I was actually focused more on this. And I'd say right about this 75th, 80th minute was where I started watching this particular match. And I guess I was right on time getting to see all 3 goals. But Paraguay really showing a lot of heart here to go to Barranquilla and picking up this result is, you know, is certainly unexpected, Rob, because I remember when you made this prediction last week that Paraguay was going to win 1-0, you were like, screw it, I'm going with my heart. I think you actually used those words.
I did.
And you know, so this certainly was an unexpected victory for Paraguay in this point. And now they find themselves really 1 point or 2 points out of that automatic qualification spot. And with the matches that are coming up tomorrow, which we're going to hit in a few minutes, a lot of these, you know, like the ESPN Power Index has Paraguay as the third choice to qualify, which means Uruguay, which is a 99%. I want to say Colombia was the second choice, but then Paraguay is the third choice at 60%. I mean, this victory is enormous, and I think this victory is really why all these matches are going to be must-see TV tomorrow night for CONMEBOL, because every single match that we have, we only labeled, I think, two of them, Rob, for the match of the week, but all five matches are important here.
Absolutely.
You know, Brazil-Chile, all the way down. Actually, I can't find a match that doesn't have an effect on this. I mean, even Uruguay-Bolivia has an effect on this particular table. So, there, you know, this is why you play them all. And I can't help, Rob, but thinking back to the beginning of qualifying, about four or five matches in, I must have mentioned it on this show a dozen times at this point, Rob, because I can't wrap my head around it still, that I asked Tim Vickery, you know, Ecuador is going to get into the World Cup, so who is not going to make it, right? You remember? I mean, it's got to be, yeah. Got to be what, a year and a half ago I asked him that question?
More. It has to be when we started that, the qualifications.
Amazing. And here's Ecuador having lost their last five matches, straight. They're going to host Argentina in this final round. But here's a team that we were talking about at the beginning of all this, saying they're in, so who's out? It just shows you how fortunes have changed in CONMEBOL, you know, over the long course of qualification. So
it's, and how you can't really make your predictions early, not even for Argentina, because look at the situation they're in. No one would have expected. Yeah, if I told you that Argentina will be 1 point off of qualification, and really risking the chance of missing the World Cup, you must have think I was crazy.
Right, exactly. It's just unbelievable. But so let's jump into the CONCACAF match, Rob. I want to have you do that one as well.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. The CONCACAF match that we predicted was, and I just lost it. Sorry, it was the United States against Panama. You know, the United States really wanted to bounce back into qualification for the World Cup. We predicted, well, actually, Joe, you predicted a 2-1 victory. Well, we both predicted a 2-1 victory for the United States. It ended up 4-0 to the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, goals from, I want to say it was from Pulisic, Altidore, and Bobby Wood, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
That is correct. Pulisic, Altidore with a brace, including the penalty kick, and Bobby Wood in the 63rd minute.
Absolutely, and that that put the United States in a good position to qualify directly into the World Cup, which we'll talk about in our match of the week in a few minutes. But obviously, a really important win for the United States. And I think just we wanted to mention, you know, I guess the other CONCACAF match was Costa Rica against Honduras. You know, Costa Rica only needed a draw to qualify for Russia. You know, Honduras took the lead in the 66th minute, and when everyone was thinking that Honduras was going to get the away win in San Jose, you know, Vancouver Whitecaps' own Kendall Watson scores a header in the 95th minute, literally the last second of the game, to send Costa Rica to the World Cup, and in the most dramatic fashion, don't you think, Joe?
Oh, it was amazing to see. It was, you could see Honduras, I would say, Rob, with about 10 minutes to go in the match, really was trying to play the park the bus stall game, you know what I mean? They, every single foul, every single touch, every single bump from a Costa Rican player elicited a reaction that you thought the paramedics were going to have to run out on the field and do CPR. I mean, it was like Lee Harvey Oswald from the Book Depository kind of stuff. I mean, it was ridiculous, Rob. It was poetic justice is what it was in the end. It was the acting with the diving and the stalling and the gamesmanship. I mean, I understand some of it and having it, you know, I understand it's part of the game. I understand we see it every now and again. This, Rob, was at a level that I never thought we'd ever see. It was that bad. And you know, and fair play to Honduras. They realized this 3 points, this was it. You know, this was their opportunity to get to the World Cup. Their next match is Mexico. You know, yep. This is not going to be an easy spot to get to.
Absolutely.
So they are, you know, this was their World Cup. They needed this. And so I understand it, but it wasn't even borderline ridiculous. It was ridiculous.
It was.
And it was, and for me to see that equalizer in the, you know, in that stop, it was stoppage time, if I remember correctly.
95th minute. Yeah. 95th.
Yeah. It was just ridiculous. And it was poetic justice in the end. So, you know, congratulations to Costa Rica. It was a foregone conclusion. They were going to get there. They got there, you know, with the 1 point they needed in the match, and their last matchup against Panama is really, you know, water under the bridge at this point.
but definitely a must-win for Panama, nevertheless, and a must-win for Honduras if one of these teams will want to go to the World Cup. Obviously, Panama have the advantage with the goal difference. I believe it's -5, if I'm not mistaken. Yep, -5. So it's the advantage is on Panama to get a result against Costa Rica, and for Honduras to really, really win this one. And I mean beat this this Mexico side, who I think are you know, they've already qualified. They really maybe want to finish this this process unbeaten with 6 wins and 3 draws, and maybe end the game with an unbeaten streak. But let's see what happens on Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow.
Absolutely. So, all right, let's jump over to the African qualifier real quick, Rob. Last week we had talked about the Cape Verde Senegal matchup. I had predicted a 2-1 victory for Senegal. You had it as a 1-0 victory. This ended as a 2-0 victory. Opening the scoring was Diafra Sakho, the West Ham United player, scoring in the 81st minute, and then an Ndoye goal in stoppage time, sealing the deal here for this one. So with that particular victory, Senegal moves to the top of Group D in African qualifying with 8 points. 2 points ahead of Burkina Faso and Cape Verde, but they do have a makeup matchup. I believe they have 2 matchups, Rob, left against South Africa, who's bottom of the table. Still not clear and through yet for Senegal, but Burkina Faso and Cape Verde are gonna be fighting each other for points here, you know, running up to this last matchup. So I think in the end, I think Senegal will probably win the group and go through, but those last qualifiers won't be played until November, so we'll have to we'll revisit those. But we did get 2 qualifiers from Africa this week in Nigeria, in Egypt. The Egyptian one is the one I alluded to on the intro. We've seen videos of grown men crying with Egypt qualifying. I saw something today where Mohamed Salah had a school named after him.
Yep,
today.
That's right. That's right.
You know, for scoring that goal. So talk about big things and just, you know, just the joy of the World Cup. That's, you know, if you want to see what that does, just go look at the Egyptian reaction, because it was amazing. So, but we'll have to see what other teams join them. We've got 3 more teams to come from Africa coming up in the next few weeks. I think, Rob, and I don't have my tables up here quickly. I can try to draw them up real quick. But if I remember correctly, somebody that's been a regular the past few World Cups in Ghana is I want to say pretty much out at this point. I wanted to take
yes,
a
they
look.
Are.
Yeah, they
they're, yeah, they are. Egypt won the group. So.
That's right. Egypt won the group. So Ghana will not be attending this year's World Cup, and Nigeria eliminates the likes of Cameroon. So we've got a couple of teams that have already been eliminated. Just to give you a refresher, Group A is going to be decided between Tunisia and DR Congo. Like we said, Nigeria's already qualified from B. Morocco and the Ivory Coast are going to be fighting out for the Group C title and the rights to go to the tournament. Gabon and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang have already been eliminated from the tournament. So that's another big player. We talked about Gareth Bale not making it to the World Cup this year. The World Cup will also be without Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang next year. Senegal, we just talked about quickly, and Egypt, obviously winners of Group E. They're moving through. So let's look at the UEFA matches of the week we had last week, Rob. We had 4 of them, actually. England-Slovenia was the first one. We had predicted this one. I had a 3-1 victory for England. You had it as a 2-0 for England. But a lone goal by Harry Kane in the fourth minute of stoppage time in the second half, sealing the points for this one for England, giving them Group F with 26 points. Slovakia, 18 points, takes the second place spot. Currently have to wait, but I, Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, you might want to look this up.
Sure.
When I looked it up, there are 9 groups in UEFA qualifying, but I believe,
yep,
Slovakia had the lowest amount of points, so I believe at this point even they are out.
Yes, at the moment they are.
Yep, and actually they're completely out, because I think the teams that have matches tomorrow are already ahead of them on points.
Exactly, so yes, Slovakia are.
So Slovakia, despite finishing second, will not get into that playoff round. Scotland losing, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say losing, because they drew 2-2 to Slovenia in yesterday's qualifier, but we're ahead on this one, and another team that looked like they were trying to back the bus in. So, you know, questions asked of Scotland. They were so close, 18 points. They were tied with Slovakia, but obviously on goal differential weren't there. So, again, we had predicted 3-1 for me, 2-0 for you, and Harry Kane makes it 1-0, and England moves on as the top of Group F. The next matchup we had was Turkey-Iceland. And this matchup, we had predicted, Rob, I had it as a 1-1 draw. You had it as a 2-2 draw. 3-0 victory for this one for Bjarnason, Aronson, and I'm missing the third goal, Gudmundsson, in the 32nd minute. Giving Iceland their ticket to the World Cup. Again, they're our trivia question. 22 points, closing out Group I ahead of Croatia, who will go into the playoff round. Ukraine finishing in third on 17 points. And Turkey finishing fourth on 15 points, and that is all in Group I, like it said.
I do want to say one more thing, Joe.
Yeah, definitely.
The other thing I'm really happy that Iceland not only qualified for their first ever World Cup, mm-hmm. but the fact that that Panini, you know that Panini book that they get before every World Cup?
Yes.
It's all going to be ending with Sun.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah, I'm looking at this list. Every single player has their last name end with Sun.
Yeah. I think we've got to get Jim Hart on the show because I know he knows about this. I think it's one of, you know, kind of a Viking carryover, isn't it?
I have no idea. We got to ask him.
I think it is. We got to ask him that. And I think he may not know it, but I think we're singling him out as our Iceland expert, and he certainly is one. So, you know, we'll have to reach out to him after the show. Let's go on to the next matchup real quick, Rob, and that's Bosnia-Herzegovina and Belgium. We had this one for the Bosnian side of it, not the Belgian side of it. We had predicted a 2-1. I had it as a 2-1 for Belgium. You had it as a 1-1 draw. But in dramatic fashion, 4-3 in this one for Belgium. The opening goal scored by Thomas Meunier in the fourth minute. But I'm not going to even bother trying to give you this name. It's Medujanin in the 30th minute for Bosnia, assisted by Edin Dzeko. And Viska in the 39th minute draw Bosnia out to a 2-1 lead. And then Mishi Batshuayi and Jan Vertonghen score to make it 3-2 for Belgium. 82nd minute, Dumic scores to tie it up at the 3-3. And then Yannick Carrasco in the 84th minute make it 4-3 in the 84th minute and seal the deal for Belgium. Belgium had already won the group, and this match was for second place. Bosnia needed the result. But with the loss, combined with the Greece victory in this one over Cyprus 2-1, gives Greece second place in the in Group H. So Belgium goes on, Greece goes into the playoff, and Bosnia eliminated from the World Cup competition. So the last matchup that we had as our match of the week, and that was a match from just finished up just a few hours ago. It was Wales-Ireland. We had this one, Rob. I had it as a 2-1 Ireland victory. You had it as a 1-1 draw. But a McLean goal in the 57th minute sends Ireland into second place in this group just behind Serbia and into the World Cup. Serbia on their victory 1-0 over Georgia claimed Group D and Ireland to the playoffs, currently sitting in that last position, Rob. So we talked about Slovakia in the ninth place position. Currently, all that's left is Portugal, which we'll talk about in a minute. And Sweden are currently teams that have not played all their second place matches yet, and they're all ahead of Slovakia. So Ireland, with that 1-0 victory, get into second place overall over Wales. They get into the playoff spot for second place. They eliminate Wales from the competition, and they also eliminate Slovakia at the same time from this competition. So that's where we stand. Rob, I know we've got the week ahead coming up. We already talked about quickly Australia-Syria. Should we just put a number on this one and then have you run with the CONMEBOL and CONCACAF?
Absolutely.
All right, so let's put a number on it. What do you got?
I'm going to say 2-0 Australia. I think you know, the fairy tale that Syria has had heading into the situation ends tomorrow morning in Sydney. I think this Australia team will look very good at home, looking to play whoever finishes fourth in CONCACAF. So, yeah, I have to give the Socceroos the advantage in this one.
And, yeah, I agree with you. I'm going to go with 2-1 on this one. I think the Socceroos will do it as well. And then, for me, probably going to face Panama in that playoff, which should be, I think, a pretty even matchup, Rob. Don't you think if it is Panama?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. Hell yeah. Or whoever they play.
Definitely so. Let's give it back to you for CONMEBOL and CONCACAF.
Where do you want to start, CONCACAF or CONMEBOL? Let's start CONCACAF, make it easier.
Go for it.
Obviously, we have the last game is Trinidad and Tobago against the United States, Tuesday at 8 p.m. Obviously, it appears to have, it's going to be in a torrential downpour, at least in like really wet conditions. Obviously, the United States with a win would see them qualify for the World Cup, and I'm going to stay with that and say they will win and qualify for the World Cup. I'm going to say 2-1 to the United States.
I'm gonna go a little more aggressive. I'm going to say 2-0. It seems to me that the kid has found his groove, and he kind of let it all out against Panama. I think he continues it. So I think, I just typed in the for the record, and I typed them in backwards. So I gave Trinidad the victory. So we're going with the U.S. You've got it as 2-1, Rob, and I've got it as 2-0. Correct?
Yes.
All right. So let's go with.
So actually, Joe, let's say one more thing.
Yes.
Where do you see the table ending up?
This table.
Yes.
Okay, so I think obviously Mexico's first, Costa Rica second, USA third. I do think Panama's going to sneak through in fourth place against Costa Rica. I think they're going to be the ones that go over to go play Australia in the home on home to get in. Do they win or not? That remains to be seen. But I do think Panama squeak out against Honduras. The goal differential is just way too much. I think the results are going to be the same. I kind of think that Mexico and Costa Rica are going to play to draws against Panama and Honduras. I don't necessarily feel like Mexico and Costa Rica are going to mail it in, but I don't think they're going to actually put their absolute best foot forward. You're not going to get a full taste of either of those teams. And I think it'll lead to draws, and I think Panama will go through on goal differential. How about you?
Yeah, I think so too. I think Honduras are just going to miss out. I think this Mexico team will beat Honduras away, and Panama could sneak a result against Costa Rica, but even if they do, I think on goal differential, the table stays the way it is. Yeah. Panama fourth.
Heartbreaking if Panama don't make it this time, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I think all of us want to see them qualify for their first ever World Cup.
Yeah, 2 years. It would be 2 years, two qualifying cycles in a row at the last, losing at the last day. So, it'd be pretty disappointing. So, let's go to the excitement, man. Comable.
Let's go to the games. The first one is Peru Colombia Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. The game is in Lima. Peru are looking to go to the World Cup for the first time in 36 years. And you know what, Joe? I think it's destiny. You know, they've proven time and time again that, you know, they were the punching bag of all CONMEBOL, but in this process, in this qualification process alone, they have what it takes to go back to a World Cup. Which is why I'm going to say 2-1 to Peru, and I think Peru will qualify. And with that, Peru qualifies to the 2018 World Cup.
You know, I think for me, I'm just going to – this is probably one of the going to be the one I'm going to go against you on. Just because I think Colombia is not happy with the way things went in Barranquilla the other night. I think they expected to lock it up and be done with it, and that didn't happen. I think they – feel that there's a missed opportunity. This team is too talented not to act on that. So I think they go into Peru. I think they actually get a result. I'm going to go 2-1, but I'm going the other way. I'm going to take Colombia over Peru in this one. And it's sad because I enjoy watching this Peruvian team. I think they play some great football. Paulo Guerrero is a lot of fun to watch. I just think that this Colombian side is too good, and I think they're gonna bounce back and punch their ticket to Russia tomorrow night at 7:30. So
a draw would see Colombia through.
I think they're actually going to get a victory in this one.
Okay.
And you should be happy that they get the victory.
maybe.
Well, yeah.
Maybe. Thinking other results have to go their way, but we'll talk about that in a bit.
You got it.
Obviously, the other game happening in CONMEBOL is Ecuador against Argentina. You know, it's do or die for Argentina Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. They're going to be at the altitude of Quito, which is very hard to play, I think, for any team to do that. I think Brazil and I believe Colombia or one of those other countries were the only ones to beat Ecuador away. Peru, obviously, as well. Mm-hmm. But it's a really tough game. This is a must-win for Argentina. I mean, must-win. No draw, no loss would help them at all. And for them to miss their first World Cup since 1970 would be catastrophic, which is why I'm going all guns blazing and say Argentina win this in a sloppy game, 1-0.
1-0. You know, Ecuador, like I'd said a little bit earlier, they've lost their last five matches in qualifying. When is Argentina going to be Argentina?
This is now.
It has to be. You know, just like Elvis said, it's now or never, right? It has to be now, and I think they get there. You know, I'm going to make a 2-0 victory prediction. I'm going to say Argentina wins this 2-0. I'm going to go even a little further out and say Dybala comes off the bench as a super sub and scores in this one as well. So, I'm going with Argentina in this one. I think they're going to punch their ticket. And even though, you know, here we stand tonight with the distinct potential right now on Monday night, October 9th, 8:15 p.m. Eastern, we sit here with the distinct possibility that this World Cup could see no Lionel Messi, no Cristiano Ronaldo. There is still that possibility. But I don't think that's going to happen in the end. I think they all pretty much get there. But
now, Joe, having said that, if they do not qualify for the World Cup, is this the end for Messi, Ronaldo, Messi, Mascherano, Higuain, Aguero, Di Maria, those guys for the national team? Like, is this done?
No.
I say yes. I say if Argentina do not qualify for the World Cup tomorrow night, Messi announces his retirement from the Argentina national team.
Okay, yeah, no, I agree with you. If they don't make it, yeah, then I think Messi does step away and say, you know what, enough's enough.
He will come back, and he will not come back.
No, and that time he'll do it for good. Yeah, the last time he walked away was because the stuff with the federation. There's all that stuff. So that's why he walked away the last time. This time he walks away. He walks away on his. It's on him, right? I mean, for that particular reason, it's on him. So no, I do agree with you that if they don't qualify, he does. And then for me, if I don't know about Higuain, I don't know about the relationship between Messi and Higuain. So I don't want to go there, but I do know that the relationship between Messi and Mascherano is very, very deep. So I think that if you do have Argentina not qualify after tomorrow night's match, then yeah, I think you do see Messi step away. I think you see Mascherano walk with him. I think you might even see maybe Di Maria step away. I don't know that you see
Guadalupe. I see them all leave. I see them all leave.
You see Aguero, you see the whole
kit and caboodle. Yes, that generation of players.
Okay, so the Icardis, the Dybalas, they stick around.
Yep, the Icardis, the Dybalas, maybe the Papu Gomez's, you know, the Acuñas, the Angel Correas, those kind of players. The Alarios, they stay.
Okay.
But those players I just mentioned, they leave if they don't qualify for the World Cup. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so let's say they do qualify for the World Cup and they have a horrible showing. This is, you know, because Messi's not at a point where he's too old to play in the next one. So, you know, let's say they have a horrible showing in Russia. Is that another key for them to step away?
Well, define horrible showing.
Eliminated in the round of 16.
I think he stays. I think he stays.
Okay, yeah, I think...
If it's the group stage, yeah, maybe a different story.
Yeah, I mean, it's a disaster if it's the group stage, but this team is good enough to go to the semifinals, the finals. Let's be honest. On paper, this team is good enough.
Yeah, but it's not, Joe, I'm sorry, but, you know, it's not more on paper anymore.
No.
Like, we sit here week in, week out saying Argentina will win these games, and they haven't.
Yeah,
we can't really just say in paper, but I think, yeah, I get what you're saying.
I think it causes us to ask the questions, you know, but at the same time, would you bet against them?
No.
No.
But would you bet for them?
Well, sometimes it's one way or the other. You don't bet exactly. You don't bet the draw. So either you're going to bet against them or you're going to bet for them. And I would still put my money on them.
All right.
You know, so that's, yeah, they're too good not to. So
right, absolutely. Having said that, Joe, I think it must be right to predict our top five.
Yeah. For the table.
So I could do the table right here in front of me. All right. So we can give you a score for the. So we have three more matches of the week.
we'll give you real quick ones. All right. So
yeah,
so
absolutely. Paraguay, Venezuela. Who wins?
I'm sorry. Paraguay, Venezuela.
Yes.
Paraguay 2-0.
2-0 Paraguay. I'm gonna say 1-0 Paraguay in this one.
Okay. Brazil, Chile. I am gonna take that one as a. Where is that played right now, Rob?
That is in Brazil. Brazil, I've never lost a World Cup qualifier.
2-0 Brazil.
2-0 Brazil. I'm going to say 2-1 Brazil.
Okay.
And the last one, Uruguay, Bolivia.
3-1 Uruguay.
3-1 Uruguay?
Yep.
And I'm going to say 3-0 Uruguay. So, both our tables, my table as it stands, Brazil qualify in first, who already qualified, with 41. Yep. Uruguay in second with 31. Peru in third with 28. Argentina with the same amount of points and the same amount of goal differential, 2. in fourth, Paraguay in fifth place with 27 points. Chile and Colombia missed the World Cup with a point.
On your table.
That's my table.
My table?
Your table, Brazil first with 41, Uruguay second with 31, Colombia in third with 29 points, Argentina in fourth with 28, Paraguay in fifth with 27 points, Chile in 26th, Peru with 25, missed the World Cup.
So I've got Chile and Peru out. You've got Chile and
Colombia.
And Colombia out. So both of us are really predicting Chile is out.
Yep. Okay. And both of us are predicting Paraguay going in.
The two-time South American champions out of the World Cup. That's what we're going with as of right now. Well, we'll see how good we are at this next week.
Let's see. We've been wrong before. All right. So let's see what happens.
So let's hit our last qualifier in UEFA. The big one tomorrow, Portugal-Switzerland, 2:45 p.m. in Lisbon. Currently, Portugal sit in second place in the group. I'm just going to get the standings up here real quick. Switzerland on 27 points, Portugal on 24 points. The last time these two teams played was a victory for Switzerland. They're currently perfect in the group right now. The only other team to do that so far is Germany, 10 matches, 10 wins. They're the only other team to do that in qualifying in Europe this time. Switzerland trying to be the second team to do that. Having said that, looking at this matchup, I don't see any. My preview doesn't give me any of the injuries, so I don't know who would be missing from this, and I can't wrap my head around why Switzerland is still this good. But they're perfect on qualifying right now. They've only conceded 5 goals. They're not scoring a ton like Portugal. Portugal's outscored them 30 goals to 23 goals. So, and they've kind of had a little bit of a weak group. Aside from Hungary, who would probably be the only other challenge spot, Faroe Islands, Latvia, and Andorra were the other three teams. So this was always destined to be a Switzerland-Portugal group. So having said that, I'm gonna get crazy on this a little bit, Rob. I'm going to go to a 1-1 draw on this. And I'm going to see Switzerland win the group, and Portugal goes into the playoff. How about you, sir? I know this. I know a lot of people want to pick Portugal, and Portugal's a heavy favorite. But like I said, I'm going to get a little crazy on this one and go with a 1-1.
Well, I'm not going to be a little bit crazy, but there's nothing wrong about that, going against that. But I'm going to pick the home side in this one. I think at home, I think Ronaldo on form. It's the perfect match. And for the Messi Ronaldo fans, tomorrow's going to be a crazy day for them. That's for sure, because one of them might be heading to the World Cup, one might be heading out, or vice versa, or both of them will have to settle for a playoff. Right. So it could work one way or the other. But I think just like his perceived rival, Messi, will qualify to the World Cup directly, I think Portugal will as well. I will pick Ronaldo to score both goals in a 2-1 victory. For the European champions.
That prediction is just as bold. You're putting both of them on Ronaldo.
So really?
Well, sure, really? Because you're predicting Ronaldo straight up to do it. Not.
Well, I think he scores. Absolutely. Yeah. I think he scores.
No, you said both. You said he scores both.
Yes. No. I say he scores both, but I would not be surprised if he does score. Okay. Regardless.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if he scores either. So, all right. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see if they punch their ticket to Russia 2018 or if Switzerland does. So let's obviously, Rob, after this, we get back to normal, right? We get back into the leagues. We're going to jump into Champions League in a couple weeks. So let's give it back to you to prep us for La Liga, because we've got some big matches coming up this week, man.
Very big matches. And the biggest match that we can come back from the World Cup qualifiers is Atletico Madrid taking on Barcelona at the new stadium at the Wanda Metropolitano. The game's at Saturday at 2:45 p.m. This is a really good game. Barcelona look very good. They started very well this season. I think they're going to continue this form. Obviously, this is a tough match to predict for anyone, being such a tight match between Atletico Madrid and Barcelona. But I think I'm going to favor the Catalans to get an away win here. I'm going to say 2-1 Barcelona.
2-1 Barca in this one, and to remain undefeated, by the way, them and Napoli, the only two teams in league that are currently unblemished on their record, so looking to hold on to that. Let's run over to France real quick, and on Sunday at 9 a.m., you're going to find Bordeaux playing Nantes in Bordeaux. Not much to speak of. There's a couple of injuries here Gaillac and Sabali for Bordeaux and for Nantes. We're going to miss Giroto, Kayembe, and Paloi. Looking at the standings here quickly between these two teams, we've got Nantes in fourth place currently and Bordeaux in sixth place early on in the season, eight matches in. I'm going to take Bordeaux in this one to pick up the home victory. I'm going to go with a 2-1 here and moving forward. So, Rob, over to you for a pretty decent one in England this week.
Absolutely. It's one of the big rivalries in all of England. It's Liverpool against Manchester United, Saturday at 7:30 a.m., an early one for all of us here in the United States. I think Manchester United, with the fine form that they've been on this so far this season, they haven't lost a single game yet. As well, Liverpool, you know, you kind of have to question their consistency so far this season, despite being brilliant on some occasions. You kind of have to favor the Red Devils in this one over the Reds, which is why I'm going to say 3-1 Manchester United.
That is a strong prediction, you know, but Liverpool have not shown to really be that good defensively so far this year, so no reason to pick against them.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Italy, let's get over there quickly into the Serie A. When they come back with a bang. You know, we had one huge match in La Liga this week. We have one huge match in England this week. We've got three big ones in Italy, but we're only going to give you predictions on one of them. The big matchups this week, and again, we talked about this with Matt Santangelo a couple weeks ago. Smart of Serie A to stagger these matches in terms of their playing times and even dates so that everyone gets to see them. We've got Juve-Lazio kicking off round eight in Italy on Saturday. And right after that particular matchup, we have Roma-Napoli as the second matchup, which, I mean, talk about two matches you definitely don't want to miss. That's both of them. But, of course, if that wasn't enough for you, we've got the Milan Derby coming up this week. And that's going to be our match of the week Sunday at 2:45 p.m. Inter right now is the best defensive team in Italy, having only conceded three goals after seven matches and have not conceded a goal in the second half. AC Milan, after a pretty decent start, have lost their last two matchups. They lost 2-0 to Roma before the break, and they lost 2-0 to Samp the week before that. So they are a little bit of a rut at this point. People are questioning Montella and his ability with this team. You know, I'd like to be funny and say Milan's going to win this, you know, and then you know which one I know. But I think Inter Milan is going to actually win this matchup. It's going to be a tight 1-0 victory, as these derbies can be. These also can be explosive, but you just start to question Milan's ability to score goals, especially even though they have some great strikers and some great players. They're having a little bit of trouble the past few weeks putting the ball in the back of the net. So I think this is not the team to come out of it with the defensive quality that Inter has displayed so far this season. So I'm going 1-0 Inter Milan on Sunday, 2:45. Over to you, sir, for another great one in the Bundesliga.
Absolutely. A battle in the Bundesliga as we have the undefeated Borussia Dortmund taking on RB Leipzig Saturday at 12:30 p.m. Obviously, as I mentioned, Borussia Dortmund are in first with 19, with Leipzig in fourth with 13, with a big opportunity to go all the way up to the second place, jumping over Hoffenheim and Bayern Munich out of all teams. You know, this Borussia Dortmund side look red hot. You know, only conceded two goals so far in seven games, scored 21 goals in the process. Yeah, you can't really bet against them, don't you think, Joe?
No, I don't think you can bet against them at all. They've been playing. They've had a great start to this season so far.
Absolutely, and despite it not being probably shown in the Champions League, in the league, it's a whole different story, which is why I picked Dortmund to win this one 2-0.
2-0. That's going to be a fun one to watch. So let's head over. Let's go back across the pond to MLS. We are, Rob, we're almost there. We're almost at decision day. And the nice thing that MLS did about the matchups this week is they played the matchups. So you've got an Eastern Conference day, and then you've got a Western Conference day in terms of matches. But our matches of the week is going to be in the Eastern Conference, and that's going to be the New York Red Bull and Atlanta United. This one is going to kick off Sunday at 5 p.m. I think Atlanta United, even though I believe, if I remember correctly, they're in third place right now in the Eastern Conference, and Red Bull are just hanging on to that last playoff spot. Atlanta's sorely going to miss Miguel Almiron, who's still out with the hamstring injury here. And it could come back to bite them. And, you know, but this matchup is going to be at Red Bull Arena on Sunday at 5 p.m. You know, Atlanta's still talented, Rob. I'm going to take this one as a draw. I'm going to take it as a 1-1 draw. You know, I think there's still enough talent to hang with everybody in Atlanta. And if they can get Miguel Almiron back and healthy for this playoff run, I think this team has a lot of opportunity to surprise. So we'll have to see where it goes from there. But
definitely,
let's go 1-1 on Sunday, 5 o'clock. So, Rob, let's see here. I'm just looking at my plan here, and as far as the plan goes, all I've got to do is give you the trivia answer.
Yep.
So let me.
Well, I answer it.
All right. Yep, your answer. I'm going to give you the question again. Yeah. So Iceland qualified for the World Cup today, a nation of 334,000 people. They are the smallest country to qualify for the World Cup. What country's record did they break? What year did that country get into the World Cup? And what was their population at the time?
You know, it's funny because I was writing a tweet about the amount of times a team has made the World Cup. You know, Iceland was team number 78 to ever make the FIFA World Cup, and then I decided to see the smallest team to make it, and that team was Trinidad and Tobago in 2006. But the population, oh man, 1. I know it's 1 million, but I don't know exactly. Yeah. 1.3, I want to say.
That would be a bingo, sir.
Never mind.
Yep. 2006, 1.3 million people. That was the previous record, Trinidad and Tobago. So,
what's the population of Iceland?
334,000.
So that's more. That's less than Connecticut.
Yeah, yeah.
That's less than Bridgeport.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I need to check. I'll check one more time.
I think you are.
No, never mind. That is more than Bridgeport. Never mind. But it's less than. Actually, the smallest state in the country is Rhode Island, right? Like population wise.
I believe so. It might be Delaware. No. It's actually like Wyoming.
It's Wyoming.
Yep. 800.
What was the number for Iceland again? 3,000.
334,000.
Wyoming 585.
Yes. So there's less people in Iceland than there is in Wyoming, and that team is going to the World Cup. So,
well, congrats to them, and let's hope they don't play you guys or the United States or Paraguay if they make it.
Absolutely. Well, we're all getting in, so to hell with it.
Hopefully.
So, all right. So let's, with that in mind, let's hit the closing music.
That's good.
Let's do it. All right. Let's get the. So for episode 179 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Lee Gunner from Gunner Bang TV for joining us tonight. Next week, we will return with a final look at the World Cup field as it stands. We're going to give you all the action from all the big games, and we'll also talk about the return of Champions League and Europa League. So for episode 179 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas. Let's go, Paraguay. Let's go to the World Cup.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Forza USA, and good night.